for reflection. So don't even begin to imagine a neat, well-trimmed walkway. If queerness is indeed a path, it is a wild and chaotic, overgrown, twisting and turning back on itself, at times plunging into deep pools of unknown liquid, then emerging suddenly onto dry ground. On this path, the future is often so murky that you can't see your hand in front of your face. Oh, and then suddenly you turn a corner and a breathtaking vista opens before you. Nothing on this path is once, and nothing on it is done. The demand of this path, the obstacles and opportunities, interact with one another. They may take place in any order and are likely to be repeated, exacting more precise demands all the time. A queer person lives them over and over again. None of us walks the path perfectly, and some queer folk are not able to at all and flat out refuse to walk parts of it at all. To the extent that queer experience can be conceived as a path, it bears a remarkable resemblance to the path of Christian virtue. And this is also clear. What I know about Christian virtue, about Christianity as a path, I have learned primarily from walking this queer path every day of my life.
apologize, I'm losing my voice a little bit. Good morning. My name is Deborah DeBose. And I am a member of this church and a lesbian. My wife, Pam, is sitting right over there. I'm going to be telling you a lot more about me and us in a few minutes, but I'm going to open with a poem I wrote a little while back. Please don't judge me too harshly on my writing ability as to content I want to share. I will tell you that the poem had the F word in it a lot. For those of you with more delicate sensibilities, I will change it to frack. But just know I'm thinking the other word. It's called My Gay Agenda. Bye, honey. Have a good day. I'm not awake. I don't have to be. I've said it so many years, it's an autonomic response now. Hear the door open in the pre-dawn hours, say bye. She says sometimes I throw in something else like, hi-ho, it's off to work you go, and giggle. I don't remember. I'm asleep. She loves me for it. When she rolls out in the morning, these two little dogs make me the filling in the canine sandwich. It's soft and warm, this life we have. The dogs need to go out. I corral them away from our cat. He's an old man. He likes to spend his time on the porch now. He's just an old gentleman who greets us at the car and walks us to the door. He seems lost now. His twin sister died this past year. They were together 15 years. I think about my love. One of us will be lost one day, and I pray to go first. The neighbor who hates our cat drives by and glares. Why does he hate him so much? Our old man has done nothing to him. Maybe it's us he hates. Maybe his kind of hate needs no reason. Across the street, the lady with the I'm Catholic and I vote sticker adjusts her Trump for President sign so that it points at our house. Can our tiny equality sticker on the car repel the energy? Did it attract it? I scroll the Facebook feed. Frack. Another trans woman of color murdered. Bermuda reverses legal same-sex marriage. Will they take away my marriage? Negative attitudes towards gay people increase. Pence wants us in jail. Feminists fear trans women. Gay misogyny. Bisexuality isn't real. Log cabin Republicans? Frack, frack, frack. Breathe, breathe, breathe. My work was never enough. Put me in the firing line. Sickness in the Christian hospital, fear. Not of my health, but of the staff. Breathe. Escape to TV, family love movie. They're all beautiful and loving and straight. When was the last time my brother spoke to me? Not since I came out. Breathe. Mother wasn't at my wedding. Must not talk about my love. Pretend. Breathe. My son fills me with love and sadness. His love for us, his fear for us. Hold him close. Breathe. My daughter, her pain, her blame. Can't go there now. Feel the tears. Breathe. Pet the dogs. Breathe. Rock on the porch. Breathe. Watch the birds in the trees. Breathe. Read. Write. Work. Breathe. Soon she'll be home. She'll hold me close, and I'll be able to breathe. When I decided I was going to give this service, I talked to my wife about it, what I was going to say, and see if she was okay with it. Her only response was, "Will you be okay?" I knew that the best way for me to explain the impact of heterosexual privilege on my life was to share my stories. As I tell you my story, I ask you to keep one thing in mind. I am a white, cisgender, middle-class, middle-aged, well-educated professional with two children. I came out late in life after I had an education, career, home, and children from a heterosexual marriage. I grew up here, and I speak Southern fluently. My parents were middle-class business owners in this community. When I was growing up, they were well-known and well-respected. While it's not my beliefs, I was raised in a fundamentalist Baptist church that we attended multiple times per week. The church was so conservative that we thought Southern Baptists were liberals. I am well-versed in all the rhetoric that goes with those beliefs. For every story that I tell you, imagine how much worse and more frightening encounters must be for an LGBT person of color, the transgender and non-binary person, the person who faces the culture shock of our area, and the poor and homeless LGBT person who doesn't have an education, a nice home, a nice car, or nice clothes. I mentioned that I came out late in life. Growing up here, I didn't even know what a lesbian was, much less that I might be one. I never even heard the word until I went away to college. There was no internet at the time. At FSU in the 70s, I was involved in the women's movement, but the mainstream women's movement wanted no association with lesbians. The only out lesbians I ever met were a group of radical lesbian separatists on campus. I liked men, and I had no problem working or associating with them, so I knew I wasn't that, so I assumed I wasn't a lesbian. I went on living my heterosexual life, eventually married and had two children. It wasn't a great marriage, but I am very thankful for my children. I didn't really give much thought to my own sexuality until after I separated from my husband. When I started thinking about dating again, it hit me like a hurricane, a whirling, swirling, emotional ride. But after it cleared, there was a peace in finally realizing who I was, but I knew that the real work of finding out how to live with this was just beginning. The first divorce lawyer I saw was a woman, supposedly a feminist. I told her my story and that I just started dating a woman. She wanted to charge me double her normal fee and said I had to immediately stop associating with any lesbians. She said there was a good chance I would lose my children. Some of you remember that there was a case here in Pensacola that made the national news where the judge gave custody to the convicted murderer husband over the lesbian wife. Unlike other minorities and marginalized groups, LGBTQ have to come out to their families and friends, churches and communities, and often lose them in the process. I was terrified. I decided to not pursue divorce right then and stayed closeted from my ex-husband, soon to be ex-husband, and all of my family. I was frightened and confused. I went to visit my best friend in Tallahassee. She said her sister-in-law was a lesbian and invited her over for us to get to know each other better so that I could talk to her. Her name was Pam. We became friends. We talked on the phone over the next 6 months. When I called her and told her I was coming to town and she wanted to get together, she was very non-committal. Unbeknownst to me, she went to her sister-in-law and asked permission to take me out on a date. She didn't ask me. I got into town, and my friend told me that Pam was taking me out on a date, and that was the first I'd heard of it. Pam was so out with her family and so comfortable with herself, she made me feel safe. She took me to a romantic restaurant. She wasn't embarrassed. When we left the restaurant, we saw a straight couple kissing in a car, and I said, "It's sad that gay people can't do that." And she said, "Who says?" and leaned over and kissed me. That was our first kiss. She took me to meet her sister and spend time with her mother. We talked and kissed for hours, and by the end of the night, I was smitten. After 6 months of a long-distance relationship, the kids and I moved to Tallahassee, where I took a job as a children's counselor working primarily with traumatized and sexually abused children, the type of work that I had been doing for 20 years. My job was hard, and I had long hours, but I really liked my supervisor and coworkers. Pam and I moved into a gay-friendly neighborhood. The kids loved their new schools. I felt free in a town away from my ex and family, and life was good. About 18 months later, my supervisor left. And a good old boy, who had worked with the agency in another area, transferred over and became my boss. First few months were fine. I didn't advertise my sexual orientation, and I passed, as some people say. My boss liked me, he joked with me, gave me good evaluations. Then one day we all went to happy hour, and I invited Pam along to join us. Everything changed after that. I couldn't do anything right. I was constantly being reprimanded. Pam and I went on a vacation with the kids. When I came back to work for my vacation, I was stopped before I even entered my office. I had had a court-ordered adolescent female client. I was told that an allegation had been made against me that I had exposed myself to her. I was shocked and appalled. I was not defended by my supervisor against the acting out adolescent. I was suspended without pay immediately and 2 days later terminated. I couldn't fight the allegation or the termination. I knew if I did, my sexual orientation would be made an issue and made public. I knew it would keep me from getting other jobs, and I feared that my ex or my family would learn about it, and me, and I would lose my children. My boss knew it too. I left traumatized, and I never worked as a children's therapist again. By choice. We moved back to Pensacola. Pam transferred here, and I took a job working hospice. Pam wasn't really happy in her new position. Events had strained our family life and our relationship. Pam and I eventually separated. I asked Pam recently if she thought we would have separated if we had been able to marry when we wanted, and she said no. If we had been married, we would have worked it out. We didn't have that option. We had other challenges during that time. We both had a number of hospitalizations then and since, and we've always worried about how our relationship would be treated by the staff. It's better now that we're married, but then we always carried a laminated copy of our healthcare surrogate papers with us everywhere we went. We were often challenged by hospital staff about our right to be with one another as family. Once when Pam was having surgery, they took her back to pre-op. I asked to go because I'm the one who always knows or has all of our medical information. I was told no. They would come and get me when she was ready. But patient after patient was going back with their spouses. I went to the nurse who came out to get the next patient, and I asked again if I could go back with my partner, that I had her medical information. And she quite rudely and sarcastically told me, she's doing just fine without you. They only let me say goodbye as they were wheeling her down the hall to surgery. Another person in the waiting room heard the exchange. It was just my luck that he was an Assembly of God minister. His whole church prayer group was there waiting with him while his wife was in surgery. I got to spend my time in the waiting room being prayed over and getting sideways glances from his group. I've learned over the years that find the gay or a gay-friendly medical staff and stick with them. I wasn't out with my family. Eventually, my ex-husband did know and has always been our supporter. But I still feared my family. They are ultra-conservative, and they have the monetary and social resources to get their way in most situations. My children were still minors. I was terrified that my family would use their influence and money to have my children taken away from me. My family only knew Pam as my good friend and roommate. I definitely could not seek comfort or support from my family after our separation. There were still very few people I confided in. One particularly bad day at work, I'd gone outside alone to the smoking area and was sitting there quietly crying when my teen supervisor came out. In a moment of fragility, I told her. She said some vague words of comfort about breakups being hard, but I knew as soon as I told her that I had made a mistake. Our relationship changed. My work was good, and I had the support of the social service supervisor, but within a few months, when I needed to extend my family medical leave for a week, despite the approval of human resources, she denied the request and had me terminated. I later learned that the same supervisor had found ways to terminate all the gay staff and patients. She was eventually demoted, not terminated, but it was not because of how she treated gay people. About this same time, I was introduced to a lesbian RN at work. She was attractive and charming and knew all the right things to say to a broken-hearted woman on the rebound. We started dating in November. She doted on the kids over Christmas, but I was already starting to see some red flags. My 12-year-old son saw them more clearly than me. He told me I could date her, but she couldn't move in. On January 1st, 2005, sorry folks, I'm losing my voice. I was rushed to the ER in the most agonizing pain I've ever experienced. My intestines had strangulated in an abdominal hernia. Shortly after reaching the hospital, they ruptured and I was scheduled for emergency surgery. They held the surgery just long enough for my children, mother, and Pam to reach the hospital to say goodbye to me. I was not expected to survive. I spent 2 days on a vent in ICU, circling the drain, as they say, but I did survive. What followed was 2 years of multiple surgeries and even more hospitalizations for infections. The RN I had been dating moved in to take care of me and the children. The dirty little secret we don't talk about outside the LGBT community is that domestic violence occurs within our community as well. I'm not here to tell you about domestic violence. What I want to tell you about is how it's different for those of us who are gay. First, it's easier to isolate us. Most of us already move within a relatively small group of friends. If your girlfriend is rude or hostile to your friends or flirts with their girlfriends, it doesn't take long before you don't have any friends. Then there's the threat of outing you. I wasn't working at the time, but I have had friends who've also had that threat of being outed to their employer. In my case, she knew that I was much more fearful of losing my children. She knew I wasn't out to my family for that reason. Her threat was to report me to DCF as an unfit mother and to out me to my mother and to encourage her to take away my children. So I stayed. But it did do damage to my children and to me and our relationship. Eventually, we got out with Pam's and my ex-husband's help. I was lucky. I had help. Pam hid all of us in her studio apartment while I had my abuser evicted from my own home. While domestic violence shelters now are generally more open to LGBTQ persons, one tactic an abuser will use in same-sex relationships is to go to the shelter and claim to be the victim. Then the shelter won't take either. The police are often very unhelpful in same-sex domestic violence. And by the way, she did out me to my mother, but I denied. At least for a couple more years until the children were grown. As you know, Pam and I did find our way back to each other. Some of you were here 4 years ago for Wedding 2.0 at the church. The legal one had been in Maryland the month before. Because we weren't allowed to marry, we had a very long engagement, 14 years. How long did you have to be engaged before you were able to be married? Did the government tell you you couldn't marry? Once I did come out to everyone, regardless of the consequences, I have had a tremendous inner peace that comes with living an authentic life. The outer world is still a bit of a problem. My brother hasn't spoken to me since I came out. My mother deals with me minimally as possible. As a public, outspoken LGBTQ advocate, there were threats of violence. The yelling man shoving a Bible in my face just as easily could have been holding a gun. The SCOTUS decision is scary for those of us in the community. Our rights are being reversed almost daily at the state level. When those cases reach the Supreme Court, we don't know what will happen. The White House refused to recognize LGBTQ Pride Month this year. The homicide and hate crime rate against LGBTQ people has more than doubled since Trump took office. 49 of our community were massacred at the Pulse nightclub. Some of you may have read my Facebook post a few days ago about that day. For those who didn't, I wrote, on June 12, 2016, I was on my way to Orlando for the NASW conference. I learned not only of the massacre, but that I had friends who were supposed to be that night but had gone back to their hotel earlier. I thanked God they got tired. I couldn't stop shaking inside. I was in Orlando to give a workshop on beyond heterocentrism and the gender binary. I felt so emotional and angry. In that moment, the last thing I wanted was to explain my existence to a room full of straight people. Not that it was an issue. Few straight social workers ever attend the LGBTQ-focused workshops. That made me angrier. I thought, they're killing us and you still don't care. I drank too much at the conference. I wanted to be with my people, not these straight people. I sought out and spent most of my time with the few gay folks at the conference. I remember feeling very paranoid, kissing my wife goodbye in an empty hallway, hotel hallway. I wondered who might be secretly watching us on the security cameras and what kind of person that was. I don't know if any of my straight friends had any idea of how I was out of control I was feeling inside. All the time I was talking, smiling, laughing with them, inside I was screaming. While the trauma of Pulse has subsided, Trump was elected and every day more LGBTQ rights are being eroded. A part of me is still screaming. Lest you think I'm just saying that all the problems are with the straight world. Within the community, we can be pretty awful to each other. Body and age bias are much worse in the LGBTQ community. Gays and lesbians frequently don't trust each other. The trans and non-binary community is still treated badly by the LGB part of the community. Bisexuals are misunderstood by just about everybody. Most people don't even know anything about pansexuals, intersex, or asexuals. Since this is the message of my stories, I will share that when my daughter came out to me as asexual, I didn't handle it well at first. I don't know if she'll forgive me for that. Her teenage and college years were tough because of so much that was going on in my life. She has chosen estrangement from me for the last 5 years. Every Sunday that we're here, if you're watching, during the silent meditation, Pam takes my hand, and I pray to a God that I don't even believe in for forgiveness and for reconciliation with my child. I'm just happy to have a place where I can hold Pam's hand. Thank you for listening.
An opportunity as you take time to reflect on this service, I hope you will read the insert that Pam has prepared on the history of Gay Pride Month. It's absolutely fabulous and very comprehensive and very well done. Sorry, Deborah and Pam are married together, and Deborah gave the, sorry, Deb did it. And she did an excellent job, and I encourage you, if you haven't already, to take it with you and take time to reflect on it. This is a time in our service that we collect the morning offering.
Sorry, Deb. I am not a stranger to the dark. Hide away, they say, 'cause we don't want your broken parts. I've learned to be ashamed of all my scars. Run away, they say, no one will love you as you are. But I won't let them break me down to dust. I know that there's a place for us, for we are glorious. let me down. I'm gonna send a flood, gonna drown them out. I am brave, I am bruised, I am who I'm meant to be. This is me. Look out, cause here I come. And I'm marching on to the beat I drum. I'm not scared to be seen. I make no apologies.
We want to welcome guests on this side of the room. We'd like to hear from you. If you have joined us recently, would you stand and introduce yourself?